Welcome. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. And I'm Catherine Davis, your host. And this program airs every Saturday at 6 p.m. over the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And the focus of this program is spirituality, consciousness, and health. And today I'm going to be looking at these three issues and how they integrate into our being. And depending how that integration takes place, it will determine our wellness, our overall state. And I find this is very important because I am personally more focused on the spiritual aspect of being. It's where I've always been most focused. And when I was a very young child, before I went to school, and my parents took me to church at the time, we were Catholic. Most of my family is still Catholic. And I remember very much being enchanted by that environment. And I loved the sounds and the colors and the incense and the processions. And I was also very much enchanted by the instructions, the so-called religious instructions. And at that time in the church, they gave small children what I now refer to as fairy tales, in a way. The basic programming of the church was delivered to you as a cartoon, a fairy tale. And I would listen to the stories of the Gospels and the stories about Jesus, and I took them as real. It never occurred to me that they weren't giving me the absolute truth. And I believed in it with all of my young heart that this is how things were. And at this stage of my life, I don't know really how much truth is in those doctrines as they're taught to us. And it's not really important for this discussion. What I'm really looking at within myself is this natural affinity for the spiritual realm. Now, one of the reasons that I had this intense affinity is because at that time, when I was still in those preschool years, I had a spiritual life that pre-existed before even going into the church. And by this, I recall that I had relationships with invisible friends, one might say, to a small child, through the imagination. But for me, these relationships were quite real. And as I look back upon it, I still consider them to be quite real, because as I've grown in maturity, I've learned that indeed there is an invisible realm and there is a spiritual realm. However, the various religions might define it or contain it or manipulate it, there is a vast spectrum of life that our physical biology is separated from. And from my more mature perception, I really think that that is what the so-called fall represents. It represents a trade-off, if you will, for this vast realm which we can think of as the invisible realm or the spiritual realm. And we came into this more solid existence in which sensitivity can be heightened in a certain way. And from that I mean the realm of experience can be heightened because the knowledge is limited, perception is limited. So one is guided to focus much more keenly into this limited perceptual realm, which I would consider the human realm, the realm in which we live, the physical realm, where we have our earth below our feet and our sky above our head, and we can feel each other, touch each other, speak to each other, and exist in a much more limited way than we would in the spiritual realm. So if we take away the dogma and we take away the judgment of what this physical realm represents, on some level of our existence in some space and time of the existence of life, we decided we wanted to have this platform to express and to grow and to experience within. I think it's very true that in this process we've lost our original cause, or maybe the original desire, or perhaps the dynamics of the experiment of being in this physical, tangible world. But I do believe that the physical realm is a creation of the more expansive spiritual realm. So if we look at that old adage, as above, so below, then I have to consider that as we look around us and we see a great deal of what seems to be chaotic, that also in the more expansive spiritual realm there is this level of chaos and uncontrollable urges and desires and curiosities. So here we are in our rather limited physical realm, and I believe that this impulse towards spirituality is an indication of a connection, an inner connection, a portal that allows us to maintain our first or original state, or at least the prior state, where we were more expansively in this so-called spiritual, invisible spiritual realm. So to me, this call towards spirituality is this natural force of connection. I believe that as physical beings, we were designed to maintain a connection and collaboration with our spiritual being, with our invisible partner in this adventure. And we come into the world with this opening that allows us as vulnerable children, not having the knowledge or the programming of the world around us, maintain that connection and communicate in that way. And the more adult people in our environment, or the more solidified and programmed people in our worldly environment, no longer regard that aspect of being as real. And so we are told as children that what we are perceiving is really our imagination. So this leads me to consider that imagination, what we've labeled as imagination is a real, tangible thing. It is a process. It is a perspective on greater realities. And the mechanism of interaction between the physical reality and the non-physical reality. It seems to make sense because our imagination, as we perceive it, happens inside the mind or happens inside the thinking process. But from my perspective, in truth, it is not inside the thinking process, but is parallel to the thinking process, and is, if anything, it is the mind and the thinking process that is within the imagination, or what we refer to as imagination, which is in actuality our mechanism for opening up the portals and connection to the invisible world. Now, when we speak of it as an invisible world, it is only invisible because our biological mechanisms have limitations. So at the end of the spectrum of our biological mechanism, we consider anything beyond that to be invisible. But is it really? Probably not. And so when we are able to recognize that, when we can fine-tune the sensitivity of our biological mechanism, we can open up into a greater spectrum of the so-called invisible reality and make those connections to this broader spectrum of information, intelligence, and wisdom. And I've always suspected that the smartest people on the planet are actually infants. When we come in with so much more information, and we come in with a much deeper engagement with this broader spectrum of reality. And I would even suggest that our sense perceptions are much more expansive as we come into the physical realm. And I've heard that as babies, as infants, grow into the physical world, that process is a process of shutting down the perception. Because if our perception, our hearing, and our vision is expansive, then we can't really see what's before us. So if you have an extreme perception as an infant and you're looking into the physical reality, would you see the skin or would you see the pores? Would you see the physical being before you or would you see the energy of their moving spirit? So it may be that part of the growing process is not an expansion, but it's a dynamic shutdown of what an infant is born with in terms of their perceptual reality. And from that perspective, I view spiritual reality as a reopening and a re-expansion of these inbred portals or perceptual sense abilities. So when we engage in the world of spirit and of spiritual cultivation, I really regard it as a reawakening of these perceptions that we're born with. And the difficulty we have is because we live in a culture, a society that doesn't recognize or accept that this can be true or that this is a possibility of our actual beingness. So that when what we are doing when we are engaging in spiritual practice or in cultivating spiritual dynamic is that we are re-expanding ourselves up into the fullness of our true reality. So if you think in terms of dehydrated food, we have food that comes off a tree, a fruit, an apple, or a pear, or a plum, or a peach, or whatever it is, a fruit grows in nature and becomes this beautiful, juicy, ripe spectacle of substance. And then, you know, sometimes we eat it as it's fresh off a tree, but there are times when we dehydrate it for preservation. And we'll put the fruit into some out in the sun or some kind of dehydrating device, and it takes all the liquid out, all the fluid out, and it concentrates all the nutrients into kind of a denser substance. And we walk around, and then it becomes, you know, you have to bite into it, it's hard and chewy. But there's also a way in which you could take something that's dehydrated, put it back into water, and the water can seep back into that elemental material and then plump back up into its fullness. Maybe not the same as the ripeness at birth, but, you know, we can conceptually see how this is happening. And so, from my perspective, spirituality is the re-immersion into the natural fluids of our original nature as being these expansive entities with a greater spectrum in terms of our perceptual realities. So spirituality is really about reawakening that which we are in our original state, or at least pre-human state. And so we have our world functioning in this state like a dehydrated fruit or a prune. It's very dense, very concentrated, has no perception of the fluidity of being. And it's part of why this dimension is so dense. Everything is concentrated. Emotions are concentrated. The physical body reality is very concentrated because it is devoid of the fluids of the pre-existent state. And when you look at our world, we see the same is true of our body politic. It's very concentrated. It's very dense. It's very limited in its perceptions and think as if to think that they have no connection to the realities around it, no connection to each other. So an apple has no connection to a plum, has no connection to a banana, has no connection to an avocado, and we all walk around like these separate little fruits. Only we've all been reduced to this prune-like state, and we have no connection to the fact that we are, yeah, okay, so we have a diversity in how we come into being as fruits of existence. But if we can perceive that the fruit still comes from a branch, and the branch or the stem is still connected to the bark or the hull of the tree or the main stem of a plant, which is still connected to the roots that lie beneath the earth, which is still interconnected in through the roots into this community of trees, and that its survival is drawn from the fluids and nutrients that come from the soils, and from the nutrients above that come from the sun and the oxygen, and that if we can begin to think of ourselves in this life as a fruit that's been dehydrated and separated from this interconnectivity of existence, then we can begin to understand the meaning of the spiritual journey. It means that as dehydrated fruit of existence in this plane of solidity, that we need to drink of the waters of the more expanded existence so that we could at the very least plump up again with the fluid of life. And in that, we have a greater sense of connectiveness and knowledge, and we can begin to recognize that we're connected all through these fruits. And for humanity, it may not look exactly like a tree, but we do come through this tree of human existence. So the first of humanity came on to this existence, and out of that first stage of humanity grew through the families into families, and then out of the families grew into clans, and out of the clans grew into tribes, and out of the tribes grew into nations, and out of the nations grew into where we are now, in a way, where we are in the perception that we are somehow not arriving out of the same root as physical beings. So this is really, for me, the journey of spirituality. And I've considered this really out of my personal roots as a small child of having and being able to maintain this connection, these internal portal links to the spiritual realm. And as I've gotten older and began to think about it, I began to realize that the real connection, the thing that makes us able to move into that realm with ease, is that thing that has been labeled our imagination. So when we flow into the field of our imagination, it allows us to connect to this greater reality and connect to the greater facets of our being, to the greater facets of our ancestral knowledge. Because if we trace our ancestry back down to the first civilizations and the first humans, first beings in this physical realm, we can continue to trace that ancestry into the pre-existent realm. And as we trace our ancestry into that pre-existent realm is where we find that manifestation of what perhaps the earlier civilizations would refer to as the dynamic or the gods, the controllers, those that were manipulating us or guiding us on the earth, depending on how you perceive it. So in the earlier ages on through the current times, those who follow the precepts of religious teachings maintain that separation of that pre-existent realm being a realm of higher beings or separate beings or more powerful beings. And those earlier civilizations began to feel vulnerable in the face of these more powerful pre-existent beings. and began to bow down and serve these pre-existent beings because of the perceptual break of that, well, these are my parents in a certain way, these are my older siblings in a certain way, and I could reach out to them for guidance because they have for more information. We began to think of these pre-existent beings as completely separate and completely powerful and potentially dangerous. And so early humanity would then think of ways in which to placate these potentially dangerous pre-existent beings and make offerings to them and show respect to them and perhaps bow down to their knowledge as being superior. And while their knowledge may be superior, they're still relatives. They're not separate from us. They're just outside the realm of condensation. And then as I further begin to consider this, okay, so let's go to that next realm, the pre-existent realm. So if we look upon life as a spectrum and the earth realm as being a certain level of condensation without the elixir, the fluid of life, the next realm, which we call the invisible realm, would be probably a less dense level of condensation. So it would still have the fluid and the elixir of life, like that firstborn fruit. But maybe it condensed down to maybe half of what we are on Earth. So it wasn't quite a prune, but maybe it was in some ways dehydrated realm, dehydrated from the fluid and elixir of life. So you have these beings who have a greater sense of connection, perhaps, to the initial fluids, elixirs of existence. So they understand their connections to the their pre-existent realm as being less dense and more wise than they. And so what would be the temptation on that level of existence? The temptation would be that well, maybe I may be less knowledgeable than the existent realm before I, but I am more knowledgeable than these people on Earth, than this realm of absolute density when people don't even have the memory of who they are. What opportunities does that provide for me? Well, maybe none, but it leaves to me the reasoning for why there may be a temptation at that level to present themselves as the most high or the most expanded or the most fluid or the most knowledgeable, the most wise, the least dense to those beings in the earth plane who didn't have the discerning power. And so the temptation would be to expand oneself by virtue of the devotion of those who are less capable to discern the truth. And those beings who found that expansive and feeling good on their realm would endeavor towards that objective. Well, you know, I'm in a position to play games with these beings on the earth, and I can have them worshiping me, and I can manipulate them, and I can have games. I can have fun with this. And then what would happen if those beings begin to realize, well, wait a minute, I understand from my expansive state that I'm being fed by the realm above me, less dense, more expansive, more wise, that energy is trickling into me in my mid-realm, and that's how I live. But suppose that being recognizes and realizes that it can also be fed from the lower realms. Because ultimately, it's the fluid of divine energy that that sacred, that life force that flows through all realms because it is the source of that creation. But these mid-realm beings, rather than being subject to the wisdom of that realm that's less dense than they, perhaps more wise, they can turn their attention to the lower realm and be nourished from that energy. And so we're on this lower plane, still sacred beings being created from the highest realm, but rather than having our fluid flow into our being as it does at birth, when we are born into this realm with a fullness of fruit, a fullness of the fluid, the liquids, the elixir of life, we have these mid-realm beings draining that off so that they can remain in power and that they can remain strong and they don't have to rely upon the wisdom of the realm that is beyond their knowledge. So from my perspective, this is what I'm seeing when I look at religions and gods and the way things have been created on Earth, where these mid-range within this spectrum of existence, soul existence, have turned their sights from the Most High, the wiser beings along the spectrum, and turn their backs to that flow of wisdom, because if they were engaging in that wisdom, then they wouldn't be feeding off the lower realms. And so we have these gods, these beings who are of this mid-realm, who have set up systems amongst humanity that allows for human beings to be entrapped in those systems so that they can feed their divine energy back into the mid-realm. And what does that divine energy look like as it's being stolen from the beings on the earth plane? It looks like fear. It looks like suffering of all kinds. Pain. It looks like hate. It looks like conflict. So we have a world in which we are attached in this system to a series of mid-realm, mid-density beings that are using their spectrum of invisibility from our world to continue to be fed because they're not taking their nourishment from the Most High. So, of course, for them, healing would look like turning their attention back to their source creator beings. And for us on Earth, it looks like the same thing. Turning away from the systems of control and seeking back into that source, that elixir of life that comes from the first thought, the first impulse to have life, whatever that is, whatever that means, whatever it looks like. But at any rate, so to me, spirituality is the act of turning away from the systemized control of beingness and be seeking out the original portals of that divine flow of our core elixir, the life force that was meant to express itself on this plane. So if I look at this, if I look at it more expansively, and I'm not pretending to know what, you know, the nature of creation is, or what that first impulse was, or from whence it came. I mean, if we look at the universe, if we look at reality, if we look at existence, it's said to be eternal and infinite. So that's beyond the scope of my brain. So I kind of accept that eternal and infinite means I'm not going to figure out where it started. It's not information that's available, certainly to us in this Earth realm. But with the understanding that it exists and that this is part of the reality, then we can certainly point ourselves in that direction. And I believe in many ways this is what sun worship is about. It's as if you are pointing yourself in the direction of the light, whatever that means, or in the direction of the moon, because the moon is also a light. And the religions, from my perspective, for me personally, don't work for me. And I think that they are a repository of great information. I believe that they are a repository of history. I believe that it's a repository of the recorded journey of humanity. You might have to look to different religions and different books to get different ages and to understand the different dimensions of humanity within this realm. But if you explore the various religions, the various books, the various stories of our existence, then you can regard it for what they are. The Bible, so-called, was in the beginning referred to as the Book of Remembrance. You know, Christianity came along and called it the Bible, and other religions called their books different things, the Quran, whatever it might be, but they're essentially a book of remembrance. Because going back to the original reality, we're in this dense reality that is condensed, concentrated, or basically a realm in, you know, a big prune, you know, all condensed down. We're not going to remember things. So I could see how it would be important for an intelligent species, as humanity is, to keep a record, because then we don't remember. Now, the original records were oral, because there wasn't writing, so they would have members of the Aboriginal peoples whose profession it was to remember, to keep the records of their civilization. And then it moved on to writing, speaking and writing and putting it into books and on down the ages. So for me, this is all about record keeping. And it doesn't hold necessarily any infinite truth. The infinite truth, from my perspective, can be discerned, can be gleaned from the records. But in order to really find a wholeness of truth, one would have to explore many records. So to me, that's the value of religion and having all of these sacred books, because there is information there that is very valuable, and we could put it to good use. But the real record is in the substance itself. So let's go back to the fruit. We're born as these vibrant, spiritually fluid beings, though in physical bodies. As we grow up in this world, that connection to the greater flow of spiritual essence gets concentrated and turned into a prune, turned into a dehydrated self. But just as you look at a dehydrated fruit, why do we value them? Because they maintain all the nutrients. They don't have the water, but they have all the original core substance. And that's how we are as these dense beings on this planet. We have all of the information, all the nutrients, all the core substance concentrated within us. And we call that DNA. It is the crystallized essence of our information, all information that leads to our very presence within this realm. So that means within the DNA strands that have been recognized and understood to some extent and studied by science, it's mostly related to the physical, dense earth plane realm. But just like there's an invisible spectrum within our perception of seeing and hearing and speaking, there is also an invisible spectrum with regard to the information encoded within our DNA. And so, as we engage in our spiritual quest, in many ways, we are traversing this invisible spectrum of our so-called DNA, the information, the book, the Akashic record of our existence. So our Akashic records are not external to ourselves. We're not traveling to some mountain, to some crystal cave, or to some planet in a far distant galaxy, or to some being in a spaceship, or to some so-called angel or archon to find our true story. We are traveling within the spectrum, the realms of our own Akash, our own DNA records, which are concentrated in our physical being. And once I began to realize this and then began to understand that all this information is within us, how do we traverse? It's the imagination. The imagination is not, as people think, a product of our brain and our neurons. The imagination is a product of this greater spectrum of being, and it is the mechanism through it, through which this invisible spectrum of being can bridge the gap between this expanded realm and the dense realm of our physicality, of our experiential earth plane. So with this in mind, it leads me to understand that creating the physical earth plane, the physical realm, is not an accident. It isn't that humanity fell. Humanity was simply birthed by a less dense realm. It was purposeful. There was intent. There was desire. There was a journey in this. So when we begin to connect back into that invisible realm, most important is for us to connect through the within, because on the inside of us is where we have the highway, the portal, the connection, the natural flow to the first cause. So it's through our internal invisible world, our internal expanded spectrum, that we have the direct connection to the first cause. And the reason that religion has been very adamant about separating us from our bodies and propagating the ideology that the physical body is sinful is because there was a need to create a separation from the perceptual tentacles that we put into this physical world, our our eyes, our hearing, our taste, our touch, our feeling. These are all perceptual tentacles for interpreting the physical world. But they're only tentacles for perceiving the physical world. They are not the all that there is to who we are. And the reason we have these perceptual tentacles into the physical world is because our very physical body is a tentacle, a perceptual perceiver into this realm. And it was never meant that we as physical beings would be severed from the prime source. There was always to be that connection. We're born with it. That's how I understand that to be. And so when we think in terms of our physical bodies, and use the physical realm, the earth realm, as the arbiter of beingness, you know, that is the essence of being lost. That is the essence of being in control. That is the essence of being a slave. Because we've been severed from our source knowledge, our source wisdom, and our source, mother, father, to exist in a realm, the earth realm, that's subject to these other mid-realm beings, or so-called gods. So, from my perspective, this is the nature of the spiritual quest. And with this being the nature of the spiritual quest, of it being an internal journey, I think a lot of people understand that that's the nature of spiritual journeying. It's an internal journeying into the realms, the invisible realms, the record of our beingness since the beginning till now. We still retain the programming of the cut-off or severed self, the physical perceptual reality that we exist only in a physical world. And I say that we keep retaining that even though we're on a spiritual quest, is because we hold those residues and those remnants that keep us from nourishing our physical body, that keep us from valuing the physical body and the physical realm. And we see that in our world, the generation of health, the degeneration of nature, and the degeneration of humanity. In general, we live in a severed reality in which we are pitted against each other, in which we are, just as the gods of the mid-realm are feeding from our energy, humanity is severed from Earth and feeding off of its energy. So we pull out the gas, we pull out the oil, we pull out the minerals, and then we exploit those substances as for energy, for, you know, fertility, being able to move across the globe. And economically, it's the same. We exploit classes of people in order to benefit economically. If you look at the current economic system, what is it based on? It's based on the exploitation of one group of humanity to another. Where did it begin? I can't say. But if you look back in history, you'll see that over externally recorded history, you will see that slavery and colonization and exploitation existed throughout recorded history. So that means that history that has been written down. We don't know if that's true of pre-recorded history, that history of humanity before the written word, before laws came into being. It may have been very different. But if you just look at recent history, you'll see that the Romans conquered lands around it, exploited humans, civilizations, nations for their resources, for their labor, constricted them into armies, expanded more until they kind of ran out of that system. I suppose they just ran out of territory, so to speak. And then it became a different kind of system where we see what happened in the Americas and Africa, in which people were exploited and enslaved for the economic benefit of their enslavers. If you look at Wall Street, you'll see that it was a slave stock, and people benefited from the buying and selling of human beings, and that's essentially all the wealth of America is based on that phenomenon. Well, we have the Romans converted into the Catholic Church, which continues to expand into the multiplicity of religions that continue to exploit and cloud the mind and make sure that the mind is separated from the spirit. And so we find ourselves in a very complicated state of existence where we cannot untangle the spiritual realm from the physical realm. I believe that they were meant to be entangled in the sense that we exist in this physical realm as a function of our spiritual intelligence, of the expanded intelligence that flowed into our creation. So all of this to say that when babies are born, they are the most intelligent because they still have those portals and that knowledge open. And our journey at this moment, I believe, is twofold. Not just to pull and break and cut those energetic streams or those that grip that we have on our being that connects us to the mid-realm gods or the mid-realm archons or however you want to think of them, and to activate within ourselves that journeying and that connection to the first cause which we have within us. But also, we are being called to care for our body, for our mind, and for our planet. So we cannot truly reach our spiritual heights or become truly connected to our first cause, to the source, while we are continuing to degenerate our body and our societies and our world. And for this reason, it makes me understand that the spiritual journey, while it is an internal journey, while it is a journey of opening up to the realities of love and compassion and understanding, it's also a journey that requires work, and maybe not work, but attention to how the engagement is happening in the exterior realm between all of us and between us as beings and our planet. And it's very important that as we look at this journey of spirituality, consciousness, and health, is that we understand that it is the fullness, the wholeness, the interconnectedness, the interdependence of all three, maybe many, many more aspects of our being that will bring us into our full or the fullest possible expression of first cause. We have to take care of all of these facets of beingness in order to make that full connection to first cause. So we cannot sit around and gaze at our navels. We cannot pretend that the people being bombed on the other side of the world, oh, well, they chose that, so I don't have to care. I don't have to be concerned. This is not what spiritual cultivation is about. It's about the fullness, the wholeness of our humanity in recognition that we are indeed in every measure, in every single manifestation of us, are collectively the representative of the first cause. Well, I'm out of time for today's program. If you have some thoughts, please give me a email, drop a line to heartofmindradio@gmail.com. If you want to find out more about teaching, the classes I offer, you can go to katharyn.one, katharyn.one, or qigongonline.net, qigongonline.net. Thank you for joining me. I'm Katharyn Davis, and this has been Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium over the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. Tune in again on Saturday at 6 p.m. for more interesting thinking, being, loving, healing, and growing. Bye for now.